Okay, it's time once again for the Truth About Comments show, the show dedicated to people who leave comments at maxkaiser.com. I'm Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert.
Hi, Max. Have you read any of the comments this week that you really, anything stand out?
Yes, I've been reading the comments as I do. And I get a lot of my ideas from reading those comments. You know, we were talking about that yesterday. There's a lot of really interesting links and thoughts on the comment board. So it's a resource for us. So I'm always looking for pearls of wisdom from our community.
Well, Yuri certainly has been on fire this week with some fantastic headlines. I want to just go over a few of the headlines. We're recording this on Saturday before Sunday. So I just wanted to point out a few items. Phil from Germany highlighted the Tony Blair Iraq war was right, even if there were no WMDs. Have you seen this story?
I saw the headline. So he's saying that, you know, who cares whether there was WMDs or not? I still would have invaded, right?
His quote is, "I would still have thought it right to remove him. I mean, obviously, you would have had to use and deploy different arguments about the nature of the threat. I can't really think we would be better off with him and his two sons still in charge, but it's incredibly difficult, and that's why I sympathize with the people who were against it for perfectly good reasons and are against it now. But for me, in the end, I had to take the decision."
Says the current board member of J.P. Morgan.
Consultant to J.P. Morgan. Right. But yeah, so, you know, this comes in the week, of course, that Barack Obama accepted the Nobel Peace Prize with a speech about war and why war is good.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think of that speech?
Well, to tell you the truth, I haven't watched the entire thing because I literally got just too nauseous and I couldn't eat. It put me off my food and I couldn't watch it. How sick it was in 1984, Orwellian, all the classic stuff. I mean, just as even more Orwellian than George Bush, because George Bush, you know, obviously ran the beginning, you know, slightly fascist kind of state, creepy torturing and justifying torture and murder and black sites and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But at least he was inarticulate. Barack Obama says it very smoothly, and all the frigging articles about his speech and the Herald Tribune, the New York Times, all these Washington Post, everybody's like lauding his speech as so fantastic, and how he defended the Afghanistan war. He defended America's honor. You know, it's sickening.
Really? The New York Times was praising the speech?
Yes. Go to Cafe Descartes and read their Herald Tribune. It's truly gross.
Well, what struck me about it was the total facade just collapsed at that point. I mean, up until then, the facade was slipping. The candidate that we came to know during the election had mythical qualities, and then once he got into office, it started to fade. Clearly, through the banking crisis, when all the favoritism that was bestowed upon Wall Street was quite unsettling, and none of the rationale for any of the policies made any sense. And here we are at the end of this year, and the biggest banks on Wall Street are getting the biggest bonuses in their history, and the unemployment rate is at historic highs. So clearly, Barrack is in the pocket of Wall Street and is not really a man of the people the way that he campaigned. But during this Nobel Prize speech, just as an observer of public speakers and of politicians, it came through basically the huckster, the snake oil salesman, the fast talking, really PowerPoint wielding corporate wonk that this guy really is, who is basically just trying to sell his audience on the idea of the benefits, the cost-benefit analysis of war. And as you point out, it's particularly despicable to see and hear this during a peace prize process. And the unfortunate aftertaste one has after seeing even a minute of this speech is that all of those kind of lurid accusations of the Manchurian candidate winning the White House now don't look so crazy anymore. This guy is so deeply embedded in corporate America and the agenda of the corpocracy that we have got quite a show coming up in the next few years.
Well, yeah, and his speech about justifying violence against other people. He said that this violence was justified in the case of self-defense and in, you know, protecting other people. You know, kind of, he was picking up on the Tony Blair theme, which I guess Tony Blair laid out in like 1997, 98 when he spoke in Chicago and laid out the case for humanitarian interventions. But in his justification, he gives the same, you know, the same justification applies to insurgents in their own countries defending themselves, the Iraqi insurgents, the Afghani insurgents, the Palestinian insurgents, anybody being occupied, he's justifying their own violence against them. And he also, he singles out the Somalis as, alludes to basically that this is a proper place to intervene against the Somali pirates, he mentions. And yet, like, fails to mention that they're protecting themselves from the dumping of nuclear waste off their oceans and the plundering of their fish, you know, their resources, the ocean resources. Doesn't mention any of that and whether or not they're defending themselves. So it was just a, yeah, it was the beginning of, like, I guess the U.S. They're really trying to, you know, they've established the brand under Bush, right, that the U.S. can basically mess up any country they want. They can invade any country they want. They can torture anybody they want anywhere in the world. They could pick up any person, any citizen of any country and pick them up and put them in a black site. They've established this. Now comes the slick veneer over it. Now that you see the ugly product, we all saw how the sausage is made, the American brand is made, okay, under Bush. Now comes the slick selling of it. They're going to repackage it and make it look prettier.
Right, so the corner coffee shop coming out of grease-stained urns turns into Starbucks.
Precisely.
And it's basically the Inquisition Part 2, where you've got a theocracy of madmen roaming the globe, totally unaccountable, committing acts of heinous violence for an ideology that supports thieving, larceny, and torture.
Well, you see that in exactly, and Tony Blair is very crucial, and he's a primary architect of this sort of thinking. And in his statement, he's saying, well, it doesn't matter if they didn't have WMDs, because I would have gotten in there anyway, because Saddam Hussein and his sons were unlikable people.
Right. He's just completely casual in his justification for murder. I mean, let's just call it for what it is. He's a sadist. I mean, he just decided one day he didn't like this guy, so he thought he'd go kill him. The place that this particular individual placed in the matrix and the power struggle of the region and the intercene in wars between various countries and interest groups, including the major oil companies, is well known. And to simply wake up one morning, as Blair did, and decide, well, you know what, darling? I'm bored. I'm going to go kill Saddam Hussein, or as he called him, Saddam, is really disturbing. But it's not like people weren't disturbed by it. You know, 2 million people in the UK were on the streets protesting. But unfortunately, the representational part of representational government no longer is representational.
Right. So now we're going to move on to a little bit of a conversation that happened. I'm going to read you the conversation and then ask for your thoughts on it.
Okay.
This is from this morning. I guess it was in one of the jibber-jabber sessions. It starts off with Mini US, who I believe lives in Australia, and he calls him, or she calls him themselves a Mini US because they believe that Australia is very like a small America.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Mini US says, looks like the banks are still in charge. That is why they are too big to fail. Francis Snoot responds, well, Mini US, I differ from what in that I believe it is those who own the rights to profit over the currencies that control things. To which many U.S. responded, "Hi, Francis, that's a bit I don't understand. If they are interested in one world currency, how do they profit from currency exchange in the future? I know you understand the SDR-IMF thingy that is planned. Forex surely won't exist under this plan, will it?" Francis Snoot replies, "They profit by demonetizing the assets and by crashing the currencies. The SDR is a way to hold rights in the basket variable until ownership is a monopoly over everything not denominated in SDR. SDR access is eliminated to the cream of the elite and the sovereign wealth fund functionaries. Trade will be dominated by the global financial regulator. Reserve accounts will not be sovereign concerns. There will be no sovereign concerns. Forex won't exist, no, and the carbon system is a way to rid the planet of useless eaters. The refusal of the media to address in any part the Basel mandates and their coming effect on world capital flows is indicative of the power operating through this system. It is truly awesome." Then Bon interrupts and says, I believe is in India. He says, "I think they plan to have five currencies, Euro, one for Africa, one for Asia Pacific, including Australia, New Zealand, something on those lines with good old IMF heading them all." Francis Snoot says, "It is interesting that the IMF can raise the interest on the SDR allotment ratios. Right now it is low. The real ball crusher is coming with those who drew down their accounts at the mercy of the IMF, and the IMF has no mercy. This is the machine that the Americans drew sustenance from for two generations. The U.S. will most probably be recognized, as Max has indicated, as a landmass after the demise of the dollar. Truly, the country America was deceived and is deceiving." And finally, Captive in Southern California says, "Francis, RE system, it is truly awesome. The only thing awesome is the ridiculous self-aggrandizing denial that these psychopaths and sociopaths have. They are neither getting away with it, nor doing the right thing, nor doing God's work. Their greed is so envenomated in their existence that it is engulfing their life and their business like a malignancy. At some point, someone points out the cancer on the presidency, and at some point, the people realize the emperor has no clothes. We're not only at that point, but we're watching the emperor walk down the dirt road with a parade of others naked around him. While the peasants stare at the nut jobs in the parade, we're laughing inside and paying homage on the outside. Make no mistake about it, the emperor still has no clothes, even if he believes otherwise." So?
Well, the main question there is the question of, if these people make so much money trading Forex and currency arbitrage, what's their interest in destroying the system that gives them so much rent on Forex trading and currency arbitrage?
Yes, and the Forex market is $3 trillion a day, right?
That's right, that's right. So, and what Snoot is saying, basically, is fatalistically saying that, but pointing toward the inescapable direction that we've seen over the past, let's say Soviet-era communism in Russia. This was the result of this type of thinking, that a group of elites could do a command and control economy. As long as you're the ones that are controlling it, you know, you're happy to control it. So they're willing to destroy the entire system so that they can have that privileged position of making the rules. So what capitalism tries to do is it tries to distribute greed in such a way that it can't hurt itself. But in communist systems, as in, let's say, Soviet-era Russia, greed takes a more pure form, and it becomes a group of really sadists over the population. So, yeah, the IMF is sponsoring a new era of command and control economics, and the Forex market, the spreads in the Forex market will pretty much evaporate. And whether there's, you know, one currency or five currencies, whatever the major block currencies left over will be, the spreads between them will be quite small. It won't be the same business as we understand it to be now. There will be very little global competition, just like there's no competition in a Soviet-era communist state. And that's the model that's being pursued through the IMF, World Bank, the United States. The United States, remarkably, is, and under Barack Obama, quite remarkably, is pulling away every single thread of society and the institutions that are part of the society that rebel against this type of thinking. Barack Obama, if he wanted to stop the emergence of a neo-American communist state, would do everything he could humanly possibly do to put as much money as he possibly could into the hands of small business owners, who would then go out and innovate and come up with ideas, and they needed to hire people. But these people are being treated like absolute dog dirt. They're being thrown under the bus, and they're being destroyed by a very small, powerful group of bankers that's the only people who have access to the White House.
Yeah, but that's because it's end of empire corrupt situation. That always happens. They all blow up because they have their oligarchs and their, you know, princes that they don't allow any competition to enter. So it will come from somewhere else. But I mean, the other thing about the Forex market is what we're seeing with the banks are literally printing money. I mean, they're having record profits. Goldman Sachs is having record profits in its 140-year history. And that's not because of any trading or anything like that. Like, it's not through exceptionally intelligent people or even their high-frequency trading. It's just the bulk of it is coming from just borrowing from the Fed at 0% and loaning back at 3%. It's like risk-free. Right.
And they're extracting those gains for personal profit.
Yeah.
So they would argue that they're making capital available that will grow the economy. But over a 20 or 30-year period of time, with wages having been flat to down, and with, for example, the past 10 years, with the Dow Jones having remained stagnant for 10 years, and with the NASDAQ having dropped considerably, you can't really say that they're philosophy, their orthodoxy of churning money and the trickle-down that one expects from that is going to benefit society works. It hasn't worked. All it did for the past 25 years is it made a very small group of people in America very rich. And you see this in the wealth and income gaps that are, have never been higher in American history. Never in the entire history of the country has such a small percentage of the population controlled such a wide large percentage of the overall wealth. And that's not consistent with anything that anyone who started the country to begin with back 220 years ago or so would have dreamed as a worthwhile outcome as part of that experiment of government buying for the people. It's the exact thing that they were rebelling against. And it's not unpredictable in the sense that you always become what you fear. You know, the founders of the United States feared empires and monarchs. And within 250 years, that's exactly what we have now in the U.S. We've got a corporocracy acting with monarchical power and no adherence to any laws at all and complete monetary extortion as the policies that they put forward. And the results are startling and shocking and abhorrent. And for Barack Obama to go into Oslo and not mention the fact that his country looks like a third world scrap heap because of what he believes in. At least the Norwegians were out in the street protesting this idiot and showing him that he's not welcome in their country. He's going to go the way of Donald Rumsfeld. He won't be able to leave America without risk of being arrested.
Well, the other interesting thing, or the sickening Orwellian sort of thing, was that he kept on quoting Martin Luther King Jr. over and over when in Martin Luther King's acceptance speech and when he won the Nobel Peace Prize. And he was like, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated precisely because he was so articulate and outspoken about U.S. Imperialism, particularly at that time in Vietnam. And he knew that the fight for freedom and justice in the U.S. could not happen without freedom overseas for the victims of U.S. imperialism.
Look, if Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today, he would spit in Obama's face. Because how dare he quote somebody, a true man of peace, while espousing war profiteering for corporations. It's disgusting, actually. I mean, I used to kid about it 6 months ago that Barack Obama should be less like Gordon Brown and more like James Brown. You know, we would want somebody who's got some grit, who's got some spine, who's got a little spice, who can really, he's got the brains, you know, what about some integrity? And apparently, no integrity, just fast-talking huckster. You know, he reminds me of a telephone cold-calling salesman from Wall Street. Within 3 years, Stacey Herbert, Barack Obama will be on the phone selling junk bonds for a bank on Wall Street to sovereign countries somewhere in the world and making a huge salary. And that's the end of the story. You know, I wouldn't hire him, though, if I were running a brokerage firm, because he just wouldn't pass the test for integrity as far as I'm concerned. I would never hire him. He's a bum.
How much do we make a bet that if Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today, he would be on the no-fly list due to his protest against the Afghanistan war and the Iraq invasion?
Like, you know, I mean, the thing is that I don't know. I just can't. This is obviously going to be a topic going forward that we will touch upon again. I'll see how much of this we can squeeze into some of our other shows. But, you know, this is really turning into quite an interesting period.
So we're going to London this week coming up. We're actually going to Dublin first, and we're going to see David.
That's right.
We're going to see David.
We're doing our show live in David's living room.
Yeah.
For him, just him. It's a private show.
I didn't tell him.
We're going to be doing it. We're going to use little finger puppets.
Max has some toilet paper to bring to...
I'm going
to
rip up some toilet paper. I'm doing all the classics. I'm going to rip up toilet paper. I'm going to hold up my Starbucks gold chocolate coin. And also... I'm going to bring along my copy of the Constitution, which I wave around on TV, which I don't think a lot of people know. That's actually a Paris metro map that I use as a substitute when I say this is my copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I get some joy out of the fact that it's actually a Paris metro map.
Mm-hmm. So somebody also had the idea that you should be, we get an email saying... From a viewer of On the Edge.
Yes.
And he said that you need to be on HBO in the U.S. Why don't you have a series on the HBO? And that he thinks it would be a huge hit if you were broadcasting into the U.S. from Paris.
Well, bring me the deal, mofo. You know, if Henry Rollins can do a deal on, what's his show on? HBO or Showtime?
Yeah, something like
All
that.
All right, Henry Rollins, who's a talented guy, but, you know, he is a political animal. He's not a financial animal. You know, yeah, HBO, of course. You know, give me a show. We can do it right here in Paris. You know, hook it up. Hook me up. I'll give you a piece of the deal.
Henry Rollins insulted. I was at UCLA, right? And he came one night to do some sort of performance thing. And he spoke in like the, there was a little stage in the corner of the basically like the pizza joint inside UCLA. And I was with my friend Pam and we were just like eating our pizza and he was like yelling at everybody, telling us we were brain dead and things like this because we were eating our pizza.
No, really?
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of being on the other side of the show.
Oh my God. Well, when I was at NYU, my English lit professor was obsessed with Black Flag.
Really?
That's all he would talk about, for like weeks on end.
Well, that's weird. I was I was post Black Flag days.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's also rather disturbing is that. I don't know. It's too disturbing. What else? Well, I read something else in the comments that I actually clipped. It was a link to something. You know what it was? We were talking about this the other day. Somebody put a link to a video of a guy somewhere in America who's building Stonehenge in his backyard using no tools whatsoever, just gravity, just using the force of gravity.
The laws of physics.
Then the laws of physics. You know, you can raise a stone 10 feet in the air, a 2-ton stone, by simply rockering it back and forth on a teeter-totter and then sticking a little wooden pole in the gap that is formed every pass of the teeter-totter. And you can raise a stone this way and all these other different things. And I found that quite interesting from our our comment section. And any flame wars this past week?
no. It has been pretty fairly, well, relatively stable, considering sometimes the family gets a little bit, you know, they all start fighting each other, and it's kind of like...
Are they playing nice with the newcomers, or are they booting them all off? Like, you know, it's a very tribal, the internet's very tribal, isn't it? So if some newbie shows up, people who are living there tend to, like, treat them... Poorly.
No, Irish Danny always welcomes them whenever somebody new comes. And so does Peter from the UK.
Oh, that's good.
They're the welcoming committee.
Oh, that's good. They got the welcoming
Danny
committee.
Offers them a Guinness, a pint of Guinness, and then Peter sings them a punk rock song.
Oh, that's good. So we'll be in London starting on the next Tuesday. No, the next Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah. That's
we'll,
right.
We're staying in Soho, around the Soho area. And we're there for 4 or 5 nights. We're going to be doing some Residence 104.4. We're doing our show live there on Saturday night. Plus, they've got some events at Residence. We're going to be participating. You know, they have a couple of parties or something. We'll go to those parties. That sounds like fun.
I don't know if I tried to see if it was the party was open to all comers or if it was just Residence performers. I couldn't tell.
Okay. Well, I'm sure they don't even know. You know.
Exactly.
They don't. They kind of just invent things, you know, as they go along. So we'll find out about that. I'm looking forward to going to where's that place that has the halloumi burger?
Oh, Hamburger Union.
Oh yeah, Hamburger Union. I like the halloumi burger.
Yeah, but it's not the last few times I've been there. Like when it was only like one or two shops.
Yeah.
It was okay. It was pretty good. But now it's like a big chain. And, you know, as soon as they go ready to go public sort of thing, their quality decreases rapidly, and they use crap products to...
Oh, that's nice.
...to appease the shareholders and all that stuff.
How about Fresh and Wild? I like the little sacks of coconut flakes and nuts.
Yeah, that was bought by that guy from America. What's his...
Whole Foods?
Whole Foods, yeah.
Whole Foods bought Fresh and Wild?
Yeah.
Did they change the name to Whole Foods or something? Or?
No.
All right, so Whole Foods, and of course, they were in the news a few months ago. Whole Foods, we'll go to Whole Foods, we'll go to...
we're going to have a big breakfast, a fry-up, English breakfast.
Yeah, I need a big fry-up, those things. I couldn't believe when people were eating those things when I first went to London.
I'll never forget your face looking at those guys eating. But
it wasn't the guys, it was the girls. You see some woman, nicely dressed, sitting in a hotel room.
Hotel room? What? What's you know, going on?
In a hotel, you know.
Uh-huh. Okay, Tiger.
Breakfast room. And she's you know, tucking into this huge plate of beans and sausages, bangers and mash and mushrooms and eggs and this. And you can't believe it. It's
black pudding.
Black pudding, and it's like dripping down their face.
That's actually Scottish breakfast.
And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? This can't be right.
Well, we're going to have... How about the ones, though, that it costs like £3 down in the East End and those calves...
Those are really something. You know, you go in there for £3, you get a paper plate, and you get like 2 fried eggs and a sausage, and...
white bread toast. Like
white bread.
The really tiny square white bread sort of...
That's the real British dining experience. You put your HP sauce on there.
Yeah, you need it to cover up the taste.
You need a lot of HP sauce on that. And then there's some guy behind the counter, looks like he's... on parole from Belmarsh, just got out. You know, he's slinging hash back there. You know, talking about fish and chips. Yeah, these are really great fish and chips, matey. Oh, yeah, £2. Okay, great. Let me get one of those waters. Well, honey, I guess that's about it for this edition of Truth About Comments.
That's it. And I'll say bye, y'all, first.
Well, you're tricky, aren't you? And I'll say bye, y'all, now. Bye, y'all.